Welcome, everyone, to today's ILTA podcast interview entitled Helping Attorneys Overcome the Mindset That Technology Is Not Just a Support Function. I'm your moderator today, Glenn Hoxie, Senior Project Manager at Paul Hastings, and I'm thrilled to be joined by four distinguished panelists, including Leslie Brown, Director of Client Value at Blank Rome, Paul Unger, Partner at Affinity Consulting, Jackie Schaefer, CEO at ClearBrief, and Brendan Miller, a legal innovation professional and attorney who was previously a director of practice systems and innovation for a AmLaw 100 firm. Welcome, Leslie, Paul, Jackie, and Brendan. So I'd love for each of you to provide a ever so brief introduction of yourself. I'm sure it won't be enough. And first, I'd like to ask Leslie to introduce herself, followed by Paul, Jackie, and Brendan.
Great. Thank you, Glenn, and thank you for inviting me to be here today. My name is Leslie Brown. I recently joined Blank Rome, I guess six months ago, as their Director of Client Value. By way of a little background, I started out my career after college as a software consultant, and after about 10 years of consulting, I went to law school and became a patent litigator. After practicing for a little while, I then moved to the other side of the house and have been in LPM, KM, and innovation roles ever since. And most recently with Blank Rome, I'm doing all client-facing solutions. We also handle pricing and LPM. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie, and welcome to this fine group. Next, I'd like to ask Paul to introduce himself, please.
Sure, thanks. Thanks, everybody. My name's Paul Unger. I am an attorney and consultant for Affinity Consulting. I serve also as our general counsel, so I'm still very much in the weeds of practicing and providing counsel. And most of my time these days is spent speaking and doing retreats and professional development programs. So teaching.
Excellent. We need a lot of those. So thank you so much, Jackie.
Yes. Hi. So I'm Jackie Schaefer. I'm the founder and CEO of ClearBrief, which won recently Litigation Product of the Year at Legal Week, woohoo, 2023. and I'm a career litigator. I started out at Paul Weiss, but I spent most of my career in government as an assistant attorney general in Alaska and Washington State. And I was also in-house counsel for a bit at a massive nonprofit before I launched ClearBrief in 2020, back when everybody was still not totally certain about AI, not that we are now, but what's I think really interesting is that, you know, we're seeing ClearBrief really take off at, you know, some of the biggest firms across the country, hundreds of boutique firms, but also courts and government agencies. So we've sort of experienced this different flavors of this topic in different settings. I'm excited to chat with the group.
I'm looking forward to it as well. Thanks. Thank you very much. And finally, Brendan.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Brendan Miller. I practice corporate and litigation law at a AmLaw 100 firm for about a dozen years, specializing in e-discovery and knowledge management. And really during that time, I quickly learned the value and developed an appreciation for how technology, when it's properly integrated into the practice of law, it makes us better legal professionals. So about 4 years ago, I made the transition from full-time practice to the administrative side in legal ops and in legal innovation, practice innovation space, where we really have been focused on, you know, helping legal teams to best use people, process, technology, data to serve our clients well. So most recently, I served as Director of Practice Systems and Innovation with Barnes and Thornburg, but I'm currently between gigs and looking at what's next for my next adventure in legal innovation. So glad to join us today.
All right. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, everybody. I'm looking forward to an interesting conversation. I'm intimidated by all of you. You have such wonderful, exciting backgrounds. I'm sure I'll learn a few things from you, all of you, over the next 45 minutes. So our first question for the day. There is a perception by some attorneys that technology is a cost of business, and specifically, it's only a support function. Where do you all think this might stem from?
Well, I will hop in here. I think you would say many attorneys have that perception, having practiced myself. I think what happens is law firms are geared to think of attorneys as the profit center without realizing that there are lots of other functions within the firm that actually are contributing to the bottom line. So I think what we have to do is, to a certain extent, reposition ourselves, those of us who are promoting technology within the firm, to show the attorneys the value that is added to using technology within their practice. And in fact, I think you're doing your client a disservice if you're not using technology in the work that you're doing for them, because there's so many ways you can reduce your write downs, make things more efficient by implementing technology. But I going back to your original question, I think the root cause is that firms in general don't do enough to let the attorneys know how much the people who are promoting technology can help them in their practice. So I think part of it is we just have to be more visible.
One thing
I'll add, Leslie, go ahead, Jackie, sorry.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think one thing I've seen a lot is that the times when the users need the technology the most are the times when they're the busiest and the most stressed out. And so that tends to be the time that they're least open to like learning about how technology can help them. So it kind of becomes this cycle where they don't really leverage the tech that the firm has. And they maybe, you know, are only used to using it for very specific tasks that have been around for decades, you know, in some cases. And so they view those as like support tools and support functions. But, you know, when they're in a moment of extreme stress, they have something due, that's maybe not the time that they should be learning about tools for the first time.
Yeah, actually, to tie into that, I agree that it's really difficult to introduce a tool when someone needs it. But the great time to introduce it is right after they've been through that and they realize the frustration they had. You can circle back with them and say, hey, next time you have to do this, why don't you consider using this tool? Let me show you how to use it now so you'll be prepared the next time. Then they'll appreciate it.
100%.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I come from an era where attorney, when I started practicing, you know, the technology that was supported was really things like the IBM Selectric typewriter. And attorneys are still stuck, many attorneys are still stuck at that mindset that, you know, that it's just a word processor. And it's just so much more than that. And, you know, if they would just attend a single educational session on cybersecurity for an hour, they would clearly see how sophisticated and important and how much of a core function technology is. And the attorneys are a profit center. There's no question about it. I mean, we all know that, but it can't a firm today cannot function without it. And the reality is that they can't retain talent if they view technology as a support function and not a core function of the firm.
Yeah, I'll just add also, you know, I think, and I'm not speaking out of turn here as an attorney, so I'm speaking on my own behalf, but I've also seen it among my colleagues. The reality is that lawyers, among lawyers and law firm culture, incentivizes this value of sort of pulling up your own bootstraps and right, and that there's value in virtually everything being bespoke. And so if I use something that helps me to generate my work product, and somehow that's taking away from what I've contributed. So that's again why this session being called Mindset, I think, is absolutely right. It's a culture thing, which is obviously a longer term strategy.
But I do think that's where, oh, sorry, Glenn. I was just going to add, I do think that's where we have to jump in changing that mindset and showing the attorneys, well, there are all these things that you do that you can't charge your client for, or you record the time and then you end up writing it off. So really what you should be thinking about is how can I leverage the technology to do the things that are more routine and then use all of my knowledge to do the things that are bespoke and be more strategic about the advice I'm giving to my clients.
Thank you, Leslie. I appreciate that. And I appreciate everybody's energetic response to that first question. So as we move into our next question, and by the way, one takeaway from that first question is show me the value. There's a few other things in there, but certainly show me the value. Okay, now based on this perception, which it seems like we generally agree it exists in some form or format, each of you have likely identified some strategies to convince attorneys and other leaders that technology is more than simply a cost of doing business. So what strategies have you employed or seen others employ to convince attorneys of the benefit of technology?
Yeah, I am happy to lead us off here. So, you know, I'm actually going to start with, I guess there are two things that come to mind most immediately. There are a lot of other things on strategies as well. But first is that topic we were just talking about relating to mindset. So for me, the strategies for convincing, it's important to have the long-term strategy in mind. And I'm going to, for a brief moment, I'm going to venture into the world of geekdom that I live in, where I'm a fan of Marvel superhero. And so one of the things that I think about in this context is a mindset lesson from Iron Man. So for those who aren't initiated, Iron Man is a super genius that develops this suit that has all kinds of tech gadgets. And, you know, at one point he's talking with one of the other superheroes and, you know, they say, hey, you know, you're a big man in a suit of armor, but you take that away and what are you? And his response was, well, I'm a genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist. And then later Iron Man turns that back to one of the other superheroes and says, look, if you're nothing without that suit, then you shouldn't have it. My takeaway from that is, you know, tech doesn't make the professional or the gizmos, the gadgets that we use don't make the professional, but it can make the professional better at what they do. So, you know, we're all as legal professionals, heroes at heart, but we can become superheroes, right? If we leverage the technologies that we've used. And so that's, you know, saying something like that's not going to change folks' minds, but it is something that I think helps to change our mindset if we're thinking about our profession is our profession and we need to use whatever is available and whatever technologies emerge to help us best serve our clients. And that the line, unfortunately, is going to continue to move as we've seen on a daily, weekly basis as to what the best technologies are. But that's the long play. I would say in terms of strategy, more short-term or more tactical in nature, for me, it boils down to just being relevant. And to me, that's what real innovation is about. It's about how are we tailoring our messages so it's relevant for the folks that we're trying to convince or as legal professionals, the clients that we're trying to serve. And so the way I believe we make it relevant and convince folks of the value is talk about things like articulate the specific problem that tech can fix, not go down the road of talking about shiny objects, but talk about, all right, here's a frustration you've experienced. Leslie was just talking about, you know, here's what you just experienced. Here's a tool that can help address that very particular problem. Talk about targeted use cases, the things that are actually relevant to the audience. And that may change depending upon the group you're talking about. But it's really tailoring the message and helping folks to make the leap for how this is relevant or could be relevant technology for the problems I'm facing.
I think if you're kind of needing to convince too much though, like it just may not be the right solution for that person. That's one thing that you know, when you're in a different role, like we are, you know, as the vendor talking with users. So for example, when we work with big firms, we'll do, you know, a larger demo. And that includes like several different people at the firm who might touch the tool and are involved with litigation, from the drafting, earliest drafting stages, to, you know, the table of authorities, generating the exhibits, getting the hyperlinks and getting it filed. And some of the features that we offer with ClearBrief, the partners on the call are like, well, I don't care about the table of authorities. I don't care about the exhibits. I don't care. You know, they don't actually deal with that, but they love our AI features that help them find the evidence. They loved also thinking that maybe other people on the team could use those tools to get them the draft back faster so they can bill more on the day of filing. So it's like really about, you know, we have to think how we are positioning it for the audience, when a lot of these tools have so many cool features, but they're not going to sort of convince, you know, the different people in different roles unless you're explaining it to them in context of what they care about.
Well, thanks, Jackie. I agree. There, it's not just a focus on the shiny object. It's certainly a focus on the need right that moment, and hopefully you can meet that need right the moment, whether with the Iron Man suit or not. So we'll move on to our next question. The best made plans, particularly to a junior leader, may look great on paper, but suddenly become a challenge when you try to put it into practice. Throughout your career, what are some obstacles that you have faced when employing strategies? And are there any risks, and have any backfired, if you want to share?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I can kick off this question. I think one of the risks that we sort of see that the leaders who are introducing technology to the firm, they are worried that, you know, the pilot won't go well. So they have done all this work to get everybody to the pilot, and they're worried that it won't go well. So they come up with their approach is to be extremely controlling over how the pilot is run. And I've actually seen how that doesn't work well. Like, it's what, you know, you need to sort of make sure that you are working with a vendor who comes to you with a project management strategy, because the vendor has much more experience often than, you know, any individual at a firm in-house at deploying that tool, right? The vendor has done it now over and over. And that time and time again, I've seen that sort of play out, where one just concrete example is they're like, don't contact anybody about the tool. Like, don't touch base with anybody in the pilot group. We just want to let them organically figure it out. And the number one success strategy that we've found is personal touch. Like, you have to help people, you know, over that hump. We talked about all those reasons why, you know, technology is only a support function. The way that you overcome that is by, you know, meeting with them, helping them to understand how it can help them on what they're working on. And just having that one short meeting in person can really, you know, I mean, over Zoom, but then they're just like off to the races. They can use the tool, and it does sort of spread organically from there. So I think just, you know, trying not to be too controlling, and ideally look for the vendor to come to you with knowledge and concrete examples of how they've deployed this and seen success. I think that's a really strong strategy to avoid that risk of the pilot failed after all that work.
I think another obstacle that sometimes gets in the way is if there's mixed messaging about the use of the technology. If, you know, maybe you have the leadership of the firm saying, this is how we want to do things, but you are working with a partner who's like, oh, no, we don't need to do that. So then you have the confusion about, should I be trying to use this, or should I just be brushing it aside? So I think when you, part of your plan, when you're putting together a pilot, is also how you're going to communicate with people about what the goal is, what, you know, what the new technology is, why it's being implemented, what you're hoping to see as an outcome, and then, you know, kind of make sure everyone is on the same page, not just the people who are implementing it, but the people who are actually participating in the pilot and who ultimately you hope will help drive adoption.
I love that.
Thank you, Leslie, Jackie.
One strategy, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask Leslie a quick follow-up to that. Is like, how have you communicated that, I guess, to the leadership in a way that's been effective?
Well, I think if the pilot starts and you're seeing that this confusion is happening, you then have to go back to the sponsor of that particular project and say, okay, you know, we launched the pilot, but here's what we're seeing so far. I think we need to back up, think about our messaging. And, it really depends. I've only been at large firms where you actually have a marketing and a communications team who can help you put that together. But even if you're in a small environment, I think it really helps to have the messaging. If it's not coming from the leadership of the firm, it should come from a partner who you know is well respected, and that people are going to listen to, because there's nothing better than when you're doing a presentation and someone who's in the audience stands up and says, hey, I use this all the time and it's really, really wonderful. So all those people who have been ignoring me talking about it suddenly pay attention. So I think you need to get someone to champion it.
I was going to say one strategy that we've employed, and especially in larger projects, I'll give you an example. Deploying a document management system, replacing an existing one for a large firm that's a year-long project, we do a series of town halls with the entire user population, as well as regular like monthly newsletters to inform them of like, this is what's to come. This is why this is so important to the organization. This is, you know, it's part of the DNA of the firm. But the town halls is, I think, a great way to do that. And not everybody can show up, but it does reach a lot of people, and it's been very effective.
All right. Well, thank you for those thoughts. Certainly. I love those. I'd love to employ all of those in my next project, whenever and wherever I can. So I want to move now a little bit to anybody who's a new C-suite or director level person who just moved into this particular position. What would you encourage them to advocate, and particularly in light of our current economy? I know we haven't touched too much on ROI and the like, but how would you recommend they approach that business value ROI conversation when proposing that new technology?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It kind of goes back to value. And honestly, you shouldn't be deploying anything at your firm until you've identified what value it's actually going to bring. And you should be able to communicate that to the people who, one, need to give you the approval to buy it and implement it, but also to the users. So I think there are a couple of different ways that you show the value of the tool. As we mentioned earlier, the efficiencies. I think you need to be armed with showing people, hey, look, we end up writing off a lot of this particular type of activity. This tool will streamline that activity, so you'll actually be able to bill more of the time that you're spending working rather than wasting time on these other activities. I also, to a certain extent, believe in I don't know if I call it the fear proposition, but I think you have to make it clear to people that your competitors, all of our competitors, are looking at using technology, and they're going to have an advantage on us if they're able to say to their clients, here's everything we're doing to really modernize the way we practice law. We have a skill set that can't be replicated by technology. That's our knowledge and our strategic thinking, but there are all these other things that we can use technology. And if you're refusing to acknowledge the need,
well, I think while we're waiting for Leslie, Jackie, it looks like you may have just popped off mute, or Brendan, whichever.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I'll jump off if Leslie rejoins here. I when I think about what's what a new leader might want to keep in mind. And I think it follows some of what Leslie was talking about. I think it's important early on to identify metrics that you're going to track, and those metrics should relate to revenue generation or revenue enablement. And, position it so this technology is not just a cost center, but that it's a tool to help with revenue generation, revenue enablement. Leslie, I saw you just rejoin.
Sorry, I didn't realize I had dropped off, but I was pretty much finished. I was just saying, the flip side of maybe not advocating, but is letting people know what their competition is doing. And you have to keep up with your competition, because your clients are certainly watching what other firms are doing when they're selecting who they want to work with.
I wanted to just chime in and say I 100%, I am hearing that more and more from firms, that they're aware not only of their, competitor firms, but they're hearing directly from the clients that, look, we're going to look elsewhere if you're not being efficient, if you're billing us for certain tasks. But one other point I wanted to put in this conversation about the ROI that might resonate with a lot of us who are in these roles and we have legal background, let's just, do our research. That's our superpower, right? As lawyers, is that we research. And so what I mean in this context is talk with partners. If you can sort of like get, the leadership in one-on-ones and sort of talk with them and hear from them about what they're worried about. And that will give you a better sense, because sometimes people aren't willing to raise those thoughts in a big group conversation. Mm-hmm. But you will be surprised how many other people are also worried about, that, or they see the goals of the firm in the next year in that light. So then you can align the tech that you propose with what they're really worried about that they haven't expressed publicly. So it's, do our research.
I would also add one way to advocate is kind of still looking at the client, is to go back to the RFPs. I don't know how many of you are involved in responding to RFPs and putting together proposals, but they all are asking, what are you using? And they're not just asking now for a list. They're asking, what are you using and what has been the benefit and how is it going to help me? So not only do you need to know what you have, you need to know the benefits of what you have. And again, I think that's a way for us to get the partners on board, is to say our clients are asking for it. And I think this year, especially with the way the economy is going, more and more of our clients are going to be concerned with how can you deliver more for lower cost? And one of the best ways for us to achieve that is through the use of technology. I mean, you can adjust the sourcing, you can look for lower cost resources, but you can also deploy a lot of technology that will save some time.
Well, Leslie and Jackie, what a wonderful segue to our next question. It's almost like this was planned. And it has to do actually with clients and client teams. Specifically, to help with your persuasion efforts, do you actually engage client teams, such as their legal department, to better understand their business needs? I know sometimes you do need to go through a partner, but sometimes some of your teams may have a special relationship with the client. So again, what do you normally do? Do any of you ever engage with client teams when you're trying to understand the business needs? Go straight to the source, if you will.
I'm happy to jump here. Yes, definitely. I would say whenever possible. And it relates really to Glenn, how you framed it there, going straight to the source. At the end of the day, we're in a service industry, and what we're trying to do is provide service of value to our clients. And it's going to be harder to provide value, demonstrate value, if we're not talking to the folks that are the arbiters of, did I find this valuable or not? There are a variety of ways we've engaged with clients to do this, to have that conversation. One, actually, relating to what Leslie just mentioned, is RFP response. If there's an opportunity to have dialogue with the client, it'll depend upon the matter, the engagement, the circumstances. But sometimes there's opportunity to have dialogue and talk about you know, was there something, you know, that you were particularly interested in? Was there a particular frustration you've seen in other engagements that led to this interest? And, you know, let's explore that. That could be an opportunity to talk about that. Or the reverse could be, you know, when something happens in a matter that doesn't go as anyone would have hoped or anticipated, you know, if you've got legal project management in place, this may happen in due course, but don't just wait on having that conversation. When something goes not as planned, use that as an opportunity to engage with the client and say, hey, that's not the way we had hoped it would happen. You know, how can we do better moving forward when this comes up again in this matter? One other I'll mention is that for some clients, even outside of the context of a particular matter or a particular engagement, we found that some are open to doing ideation or design thinking about how do we do this whole service thing? And so it's sort of purposefully taken out of the context of a particular matter, but it's talking about, you know, what is our currently the way we engage, and what if we just sat in a room and dreamed for a little bit about how things might be different, and that can lead to some pretty insightful observations, but also some real tangible ideas for projects that might be spun out of that. So those are some of the ways we've engaged.
Okay. Well, when I think and I hear design thinking with attorneys, bravo to you, Brendan, and your teams that are able to engage in those conversations. I'm sure the challenge is to get to that point. So if you are, I think, again, bravo to you and everyone's Ironman suits there at the firm. All right. Well, let's move to one of our last few questions. This is actually about stakeholders. And as a project manager, I've learned the hard way that you need to communicate with different stakeholders in different ways. So my question is this. We've touched on how there are different key stakeholders, but there are certainly more than just who we've spoken about, right? We've primarily been talking about the attorneys and a little bit about the clients. My question is, do you find that you need to approach stakeholders in a different way when convincing them of a technology's value?
Yeah, so, you know, two things come to mind with that question, and these are kind of overall strategies too, but I think it applies to the different stakeholders. The first is education. I tend to look at everything through the lens of education, and in particular, if we dig deeper, I really look at through the lens of time management, which is something that I speak about all the time, and cybersecurity, which I talk about all the time. And when we talk about those two things, we're really talking about productivity and security. And I'll just give you an example. When I talk about document management to firms, from a productivity or a time management perspective, I'm conveying to them, it's all about people having access to information in a productive and efficient way. So if you get an email that asks a question and somebody has to look in five places, they're not going to be able to be ever efficient at processing email. So we have to centralize data, you know, we have to centralize our information. From a cybersecurity perspective, we can't secure data that is scattered, right? So, I find that if we could get stakeholders in a room in an educational session, whether that's a CLE, whether it's a professional development session, whether it's a leadership retreat or a firm retreat. By the way, I think it's a wonderful idea if you can convince the stakeholders to dedicate one of their retreats, maybe every 5 years or 3 years, to technology and really focus on delivering education around technology. That's also a really good strategy. But if we could get them in, you know, away from practicing law and into an educational setting, you got them. I mean, they see it. They see that, you know, to Brendan's point, you know, I thought when he brought up the Ironman analogy, which I think is brilliant, by the way, I thought everybody needs an Iron Man suit because everybody has it. You know, you don't want to be the one without an Iron Man suit. But the reality is, it's not just that everybody has it. It's really embedded in the DNA of the firm now. It's just the foundation of the firm. You can't operate without it. So education is key. And then the second one, the big tool that is, I think, incredibly helpful, if the firm has the foresight to do this and the wisdom to do this, but to invest in practice management assessments or an analysis or, you know, whatever you want to call it, some type of strategic consulting around the use of technology and the analysis of workflows and process mapping, that's huge too. But, you know, typically if they are willing to spend the money to do an engagement like that, the light has probably gone off already and they realize the importance, and they know probably that they haven't been treating technology as a core function, but they should, right? And so that's half the battle too. But as you know, as I indicated before, I think that young attorneys, associates, or attorneys moving from one organization to another, making a lateral move, I see this in probably 50% of the assessments that I do, but they can't retain the talent if they're treating the technology as a support role, because it's just too reactive. They're reacting to more of a break fix than being proactive and really, really using technology as the DNA of the firm.
I wanted to pick up on something you said at the beginning, Paul, about stakeholders. I think sometimes we forget that at the firm, the stakeholders are more than just the attorneys. I found that some of the best advocates for certain technologies is when you do a presentation, and it might be firm-wide, you might do it with different types of groups, but I really try to get into like different teams, monthly meetings or periodic meetings, because a good admin, it can be your best advocate. You know, you do all this training, trying to get in front of the attorneys and to get them to pick up on something. And then you get in front of a group of admins and they'll say, oh, you know, every week my partner is asking me to do X, Y, and Z. If I had only known that we had this tool that could help me do that. And so, you know, you're spending a lot of time talking to the attorneys and it's not getting to the people who might benefit the most from using a particular piece of technology. So when we're getting ready to deploy things, I think we have to make sure we've included all of the stakeholders, not just the ones who are, you know, kind of the face of the firm. Yep.
Spot on.
Well said. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. We see a huge response from paralegals as kind of they're on the front lines of a lot of the tasks that need technology. But I wanted to say something that may be obvious, but it's just a simple idea, which is have the partners ask their teams to use technology. That's it. That's the advice. If each partner, they don't have to know how to use the technology themselves. And I think that's where they might have fear, I guess, that's preventing them from explicitly telling their team. But it's that simple. If the leadership is like, yeah, tell your associates, tell your paralegals to use technology on this next brief, they will do it. And those other people on the team are often, you know, maybe better positioned to like change their, they haven't had decades of doing things one certain way, and they're more open to trying it in a new way. They have a lot of fluency with technology. So that's how you really get results, in my experience.
They know the pain points as well. Paralegals know where the blocks are and where things can be improved.
Right. And they want to know, though, that if they take that, what may be perceived to them as a risk to use the technology, that it was something that the partner wants. It just gives them that courage to work through, you know, the fears and that everybody has, every single one of us, even technologists. When I have to use a new tech tool, I'm often just like a little bit nervous of what's going to happen. So I think just acknowledging that and know that if it's blessed from above, that will really move things along.
Well, as we start to wrap up, I was going to combine a couple of questions here, which is the day has arrived. You've got the engagement, you have your advocate that Leslie's been talking about, and you're actually now ready to implement technology. So my general question for the group is really twofold. One, do you have any examples where technology ultimately really truly helped the bottom line, right? It wasn't just talk, it in fact helped. And I think it maybe speaks to Brendan or Paul may have talked a little bit about metrics, right? You're able to go back to those metrics. So my question there is, where have you found that technology has helped? And really as a wrap up for the group, any other final thoughts that you might want to share with the group? Maybe we can start with Jackie.
Sure. I am so blessed to have a wonderful feedback loop with our customers who sometimes email me personally. They're like, I had an amazing experience. So one thing that just happened this week, there's a wonderful podcast called like the California Appellate Lawyers Podcast. And Jeff Lewis, who's, a really amazing appellate lawyer, talked about how he used this to finish drafting a brief, used our AI to, actually help with the writing process to find supporting evidence for what he wanted to argue, and then was able to instantly do the table of authorities, instantly do the hyperlinks, and also analyze his opponent's brief with our tool and see all the underlying sources so that he could respond. So hearing that like glowing feedback, it was like his first time using it, just, had a huge ROI in getting things done, more efficiently and also just finding that great evidence. One of our other users has also, shared that she used our instant hyperlinks feature. And, that's becoming more and more common, right? To provide a hyperlinked version of your pleading with the court. And she actually said, we won the case because of that, because at the hearing, the judge referenced the like deep into the cited transcripts, deposition transcripts. So I knew that, that wouldn't have happened basically if I hadn't sent them that hyperlinked version and we won. So we're hearing like that is, there's really powerful aspects of how you can use AI to not only in those tedious tasks that we've been talking about, but actually to win. By communicating all of that work in a more modern way. And then one last one that Bob Ambrogi has a wonderful blog about legal tech, and he did a piece on one of an amazing lawyer from Porter Hedges a few months ago who used ClearBrief in getting an appellate brief filed. So it saved the client 20% on the site checking tasks. And to her, that was a huge win because the client really, really appreciated that. And so it just shows that like firms shouldn't think of time savings and saving money on the bill in a short-term mindset, because that means that client will stay loyal to you. They knew that she actually went out of her way to save them a little bit of money. And well, it was significant actually, it was like 20% of that brief. And that's the kind of loyalty that money can't buy. Maybe it can buy. Pause there.
I would just add that as far as successful use of technology, AI, and obviously we know it's all improving, but even a couple of years ago, the AI tools that were available are game changers as far as being able to pull information from unstructured data. I think that's a huge win. When you can take a task that had taken associates hours and hours and hours to accomplish, not just pulling information, but then formatting it nicely in a way they could present. And now you have tools that will do that for you. You still have to double check it. You still have to make sure things are accurate, but it's eliminated a lot of that non-billable administrative time. So I think that's a big win.
Yeah. After doing this for almost 30 years, that time and time again, it's like the two biggest time and money savers, I think, that I have witnessed is document assembly and document management. From a document assembly perspective, to put a real estate purchase contract together for a business deal that used to take 6 hours and now you can do it in 15 minutes. it's just life-changing. And you know, you can move to a flat fee, you know, billing system of value to the client, of value to the firm. And then document management, tapping into the intellectual capital of the, you know, 30 years of basically knowledge and not having to reinvent the wheel because you have a, you know, a strong search engine that's in a, like a Net Documents or an iManage. That's a really easy, those are two very big, easy, I think, examples and wins for any organization.
I'll actually, Glenn, take the second part of your question briefly on just kind of some final thoughts. You know, for me, as we talk about this topic, I think it's important to keep in mind that adaptability, I guess two concepts, adaptability and iteration are both key. And what I mean by that is build on success. And success can mean getting one more user to try this new technology, or it could mean a scaled deployment of a technology that has already had success, but now we're taking it to a new level. But build on where you got success, but also be prepared to pivot to what's working best. So that means that sometimes you need to adapt and, you know, go with what's working. So it's relevant for the folks you're trying to serve.
Well, thank you, everyone. Certainly, I want to thank everyone for your time today. And really provide a lot of insights. I've been trying to write a lot of notes just for personal selfish reasons that I can apply later on. So I really appreciate it. And courtesy, we mentioned a few times AI. So courtesy of, I'll be anonymous, but just some random AI, generative AI tool, I put in what I wanted to conclude with. And I said, can you write it in a more thoughtful, exciting way? And so this is what it wrote. Your insightful perspectives have shown us that technology is much more than a support function in the legal world. And this is the great part. It's a powerful driver that can propel businesses to new heights, which I think, even though that came from ChatGPT, I think that's very, very accurate. And also, I just want to thank everyone for expressing yourself with passion, expertise, and a touch of humor here and there, maybe with a reference to a Marvel character. I don't know. But I really appreciate everyone's time today, and I hope all the audience who later listens to this find a lot of value in it and maybe connect with some of you after they listen. So thanks, and thank you, everyone.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.